the J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, finally something for Hajime Moriyasu to celebrate, a first and most likely only title of his reign as a Japan boss. But yes, as I said, it's definitely something we should be celebrating.
I don't want to rule out a World Cup victory just yet, but yeah, it does seem that way. And yeah, very happy for him. I thought Japan played very well second half against South Korea. The rest of the tournament, I mean, it would have been quite a miserable podcast if we finished maybe at half time of today's game. But yeah, a good performance in the end. And yeah, congratulations to him. It's always nice, obviously, to beat South Korea and to win any trophy.
Yes, most definitely. And I think we definitely made the right decision, Sam, didn't we, to hold our fire until Wednesday rather than the recording as we had originally planned after Japan's first two games. Obviously, they swept aside Hong Kong 6-0 in the opener last week. But then after the 0-0 draw against China in the Japan's second game, obviously, we knew that the title was still on the line in the EAFF Cup tonight, Wednesday, when Japan faced South Korea at the Toyota Stadium. But yeah, I guess it's fair to say there wasn't a huge amount of talking points, especially to come out of the China game, the second one.
No, it was a really difficult game to watch, and I don't think I'd have been a great listen after that game either. Yeah, it was a China team that really is, under 22, something like that. Squad is nowhere near a full-strength China. It should have been a team that were swept aside, but the Japan team on the day just, they had enough chances but weren't clinical enough. It wasn't a very great performance at all, and I was just glad to get that over and done with and move on to this Korea game, because yeah, even the Hong Kong game, they took the goals well, but it's hard to take anything from that game. Hong Kong, obviously, with the greatest respect to them, are a poor international side. So from those first two games, I was thinking, what have we even taken from this tournament? It doesn't look like we're building anything towards the World Cup. So yeah, I'm glad we moved away from recording just after that. And at least there are some positives to take from tonight's game.
Indeed. And well, you said, yeah, the first half tonight wasn't especially noteworthy. But yeah, there was a chance inside the first 30 seconds, wasn't there, for Shuto Machino. And then just before 15 minutes were up, Yuki Soma hit the post with a shot across the box from the left hand side. And two names that we definitely wouldn't have expected to be in the running, well, in Soma's case, for the golden ball, let alone the golden boot. But that's what's happened after, Soma scored the opener for Japan against South Korea 4 minutes into the second half. And Shuto Machino wrapped up the scoring with 18 minutes to go. So, yes, these two, after scoring a brace apiece against Hong Kong, have ended up with three goals each for the tournament and a share of the golden boot. Well, yes, Yuki Soma, goodness knows what sort of odds you could have got on him winning the golden ball before the EAFF Cup got going. But that's indeed what has happened at the end of the day, Sam.
Yeah, really happy for him. He's always been a player that I've quite liked, but he's never had that much consistency. And obviously this season he's playing more as a wing-back for Kenta Hasegawa and Nagoya. So he hasn't really been able to show his attacking qualities as much. And that's not necessarily that Moriyasu is known for allowing his wingers to flourish, but he seems like the perfect kind of player for Moriyasu. He's very good defensively, very diligent defensively, so he gets that out of him. And then when given a bit of freedom, he can produce some good things, and I thought he took his goal really well. He's not renowned for his headers at the back post, but if he's adding that to his game, that's really good. So I was happy for him, and I thought it was a real breakout tournament for Shuto Machino as well, who we've spoken a lot about so far for Shonan, how he's managed to galvanized that team. And I think the two games that he started, I thought he played really well in both of them. The combination play, the way he was able to hold it up, which is vital to the way Moriyasu wants to play, because obviously he wants Osaka to do that, and Machino showed that he can drop deep and mix it up. But then, yeah, he took his goals against Hong Kong superbly well, and then his movement for his goal tonight was very nice. So yeah, I thought both players acquitted themselves well, and I don't really see a spot for Soma at a World Cup, but Machino was maybe that fourth striker. You never know. He's definitely going the right way. And I think Shonan would just be glad that coverage of this competition wasn't much better and that they're not going to be fending off eyes from Europe.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, I was going to ask you, out of these two, I was going to ask you whether you thought maybe Soma had the better chance of making the final 23, maybe as a, just as a jack of all trades down that left-hand side. I mean, he's certainly not as good as Kaoru Toma going forward. You know, he's I presume that Yuta Nagatomo is going to be in the squad, so he's not as good as him defensively. But maybe I don't know. As a jack of all trades, maybe he could possibly sneak in. I wouldn't expect it myself, but I mean, after a tournament like this, I guess he hasn't done his chances any harm. Maybe a spot as a reserve is the best that Soma can hope for. But yeah, I mean, Machino, it's an interesting shout. And I mean, he's got 10, 11 games left in the J1 season, hasn't he, to really stake a claim. And we don't know how things are going to shake out fitness-wise with a couple of question marks for Japan in the forward areas. So I guess, well, I'm going to ask you to answer a question that you've kind of already just answered yourself, because you think he could be a potential bolter. But I mean, what realistically would it take, Sam? How many injuries would it take, and how many more goals would it take for Machino to, I don't know, maybe even feel like he was in with a decent chance?
Well, I think if he matches his performance from the first half of the season, carries that on, I think that is, especially in a Shonan team, where you can't expect him to be banging in 25 goals a season or anything like that. So I think he's going to, if he continues the way he's been going, that gives himself a chance. And it does, I think it's a little more open in that forward area. Osaka is obviously the preferred choice, but he's been dealing with injuries most of the season. Furuhashi has never really got to grips with the striker role necessarily under Moriyasu. He's never really been trusted in that position. And then once you go from those two, would you say were probably the guarantees in the squad, then you've got Ueda, but he's just moved to Europe. Nobody really knows how that is going to work out. Obviously, Muto's got his injuries. Maeda, again, not always playing up front. So I think there is that. That's probably where the opening is. I'm sure it'll just go to Takuma Asano and we won't have to deal with this. But I just think that's maybe the more open place rather than the wing, where Soma is competing against, well, Minamino is probably the one in the place at the moment. You've got Mitomo, who has to be in the squad on that side. I don't think he's ever going to get back in as a left back. I don't think he would ever play there, and they're not going to play as a wing back. There's been no suggestion of a wing back, so I think his options are more limited trying to get a left winger in there rather than a striker, where with a 26 man squad you might want to take one extra striker. And so if you had to put a gun to my head, I don't think either of them will make it in the end, but I think Machino maybe has just about the better chance.
Rightio then, and we should give a shout out to, well, as well to Shol Sasaki for scoring the second goal just past the hour that gave Japan some breathing room in the game. But I guess Soma and Machino have stolen the headlines from this game, and indeed the tournament as a whole, as we said, for winning those awards. And quite a scene at the presentation, where Machino lifted the trophy with his teammates feigning to celebrate with him, and then when he lifted the trophy, just standing there stone-faced, and maybe a little bit of rookie hazing, and a clip that's worth chasing down, because it's quite funny to check out. A couple of other questions, I guess, on personnel. Sam, the goalkeeping situation, the three goalkeepers in the squad, Zion Suzuki, Keisuke Osako, and Kosei Tani, each got a game in that order in the competition against Hong Kong, China, and South Korea, respectively. We know that Shuichi Gonda, Eiji Kawashima, and Daniel Schmidt are presumably ahead of those three in the pecking order. If anything occurs to one of those three, Mr. Moriyasu is forced to add another name to his rotation, do you think the fact that Tani got the South Korean game makes him more likely to be the next cab off the rank?
Yeah, I think so. I think Moriyasu saved like what he thought was his best team for this Korea game. So, yeah, Tani, I know he's always been in the more in and around the first team squad anyway. He was the first choice goalkeeper at the Olympics. So I think that position is his, as in the fourth choice goalkeeper. It should be third if you don't pick 39-year-old goalies. But other than that, yeah, Tani should. Yeah, I think Tani, and neither goalkeeper put a foot wrong in any of the games. I think they all did what was asked of them, which wasn't much in any of the games, to be completely honest. But yeah, I thought they all played fairly well, and Tani does look to be the next in line. So yeah, I think that's the fair call as well, from what I've seen of both of them, of all of these goalkeepers. Would you have any arguments with that, with Tani being the next in line?
No, it sounds reasonable to me. I mean, I think him and Osako, you can, yeah, it's really, really close. And, yeah, reading the tea leaves, I guess, yeah, Moriyasu's decision tonight makes Tani that slightly more likely. But, yeah, I think they're both good young keepers, and I don't think he could go wrong with either. But, yeah, I guess this is the clearest indication that we could garner that, yeah, Tani is just slightly ahead in his thinking. And well, I mean, yeah, say what you like about this this tournament and how difficult it is for us to pronounce, Sam, the EAFFFF Cup. But I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's given Shuto Machino a chance to wear a Japan kit. It's given Yuki Soma a chance to do so again, and I mean, prove maybe some of his doubters wrong. I mean, he's certainly not the flashiest, not the best player to ever play for Japan, but I mean, yeah, a couple of really good performances, and you know, as we said, he walks away with some silverware. We've seen some veterans like Kota Mizunuma and Gakuto Notsuda make their Japan bows, and we've seen you know, youngsters like Joel Fujita get a run in central midfield for Japan. So overall, I mean, I mean some of these players probably would have loved to have a break in the middle of summer with this 2 week gap between J1 games, but I mean, I'm sure that the players that have been involved have thoroughly enjoyed it, and well, yeah, the fact that they're able to walk away as winners of the tournament as well will make it even sweeter for all of them.
Oh, yeah, it's a really good experience for all of these players. Plus, with a World Cup ahead, you never know what if you can get yourself into Mr. Moriyasu's thinking, you might be one of those bolters that comes in. So I'm sure if plenty of this squad have taken a lot away from it. Some of the club managers, maybe less so. I think Kevin Muscat might not be greatly happy that six of his Marinos players started this game and the seventh came on off the bench and got injured. So it's not a great the day for him necessarily, but yeah, as you say, Fujita, I thought in the two games he played, looked at home at this level. He's only 20, but and he surprises you every time. He always gets better and better. He looked so comfortable. The ball in for Sommer's goal, I thought, was absolutely exquisite, and it was him really that took the game by the scruff of the neck here. And it was a fairly ordinary first half, but once he stepped in and created that goal, it just lifted Japan, and they played much better after that. So yeah, I thought he is probably out of everyone the player that comes out with the most credit, for me anyway, in this. I think there are still issues with the way that Moriyasu picked the squad. I'm not going to let it go that Makoto Mitsuda, of everyone in the squad, got the least minutes, even though I think he's probably been the most exciting player in J1 this season. So it can't all be perfect when you have to deal with Mr. Moriyasu. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of positives to take from this. And yeah, good minutes under the belt. I thought Ryuta Koike generally looked pretty decent. He had to start again today. I think Miki Yamane, there was one player I ruled out with COVID. It looks like it was Miki Yamane, but Koike showed that he could be an able deputy to step in. And I think a few of players have shown that if they are called upon, if they are needed, they are ready to step into the national team squad. So I think that's a real positive. Out of the squad, we've mentioned Machino and Sommer, of course. Is there anyone else that you think has shown themselves as capable of being in that World Cup squad?
Well, I mean, you said it last week, you wouldn't mind a shout of Joel Fujita making the squad. And I mean, as unlikely as it is, with Mr. Moriyasu in charge. And I mean, we just have to say, we've tried to give him some props off the top of the episode with, you know, finally being able to lift a trophy. But I mean, the guy is just a massive killjoy, isn't he? I mean, the way that he never plays Kaoru Mitoma. And here he goes. He actually goes to the trouble of picking Makoto Mitsuda, and then, as you say, uses him for 18 minutes across three games. I mean, come on, dude. Yeah, geez. Yeah, we're worried about the lack of people going to these games, and we wonder why. I mean, he picks exciting players in the squad and then doesn't use them. But anyway, well, could Fujita make it? I don't know. I think under any other manager, you would like to think he would be in with an even money chance, but ahead of somebody like Gaku Shibasaki. But with Moriyasu's previous, then I don't think it's going to happen, to be honest, but I'd love to see it. But yeah, I mean, overall, a lot of players will take a good experience away from this tournament, especially the younger ones, and maybe the next Asian Cup is, you know, presumably Japan will be under new management by then. And then that tournament might be an opportunity for a couple of these players, Fujita, maybe much, you know, if he continues on his decent form. And yeah, a couple of the others to stake a claim for a regular berth in the squad. But in terms of making it to the World Cup, I really can't see a Leopard changing his spots this close to the tournament. But, usually I say we wait and see on things like this, but I think we all know the answer, Sam, is that he's going to stick to his tried and trusted, isn't he?
We haven't really seen anything that would suggest otherwise, as much as I would like a little bit of injection of youth, a little bit of something just outside of the box thinking would be really nice, just occasionally from Mr. Moriyasu. But no, I think we'll just get through these next few months and hope for the best in Qatar and then see what 2023 brings.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so we'll put a bow on the East Asian FF Cup and congratulate Mr. Moriyasu and all of his players on lifting the trophy. It's just Japan's second ever win in this tournament. And, it's come at the Toyota Stadium, so on home soil. And congratulations again to all involved. All right, so with the this tournament, I can stop pronouncing it now incorrectly, the EAFF FFF Cup, FFF Cup, FFF Cup, out of the way. Of course, the runway is clear for J1 to resume this coming weekend, Sam. But before we get into what's coming up on the weekend, there is some transfer news to catch the listeners up on. A couple of interesting looking moves, and especially one big name player who was on the outer at his previous club has since found a new home.
Takashi Inui obviously left Cerezo Osaka in interesting circumstances, but he's found a new place at Shimizu S-Pulse, just part of their throw money at the wall and see what happens, try and survive. Then building an interesting squad. I wouldn't say it was in any way balanced at all, but try and play everyone, I suppose. Pikachu came in last week. We've got Inui now. I know they're looking at other Brazilian strikers as well, so... yeah, they're just going for it, I suppose. I don't think it's going to improve them defensively, where that might be where I'd be directing my attention, but it's going to be exciting. I always like watching Shimizu. You know, I'm slightly invested in them this season. So, yeah, if you get Inui on board playing for you, I think it's a terrific signing, and it helps. I think Nishizawa, who's done really well, actually, the last few weeks, he's gone out injured, so it helps fill that void as well. So, yeah, it's really interesting, really exciting signing, but I have no idea how they're going to line up in attack now. They seem to have far too many players.
Well, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. And they've got the spotlight all to themselves on a Sunday evening, Sam, when they host a Tosu at Nihon Daira. So whether Takashi Inui will make his bow for S-Pulse before the team's home faithful, we'll wait and see. You'd imagine he would at least make the bench, especially, as you say, with Nishizawa out. Yeah, so just before we move on to the other fixtures then, Sam, yeah, some other transfer news that we wanted to fill the listeners in on.
Apparently the bigger one is that Kobe, they lost Kenta Hashimoto to Huesca over in the Spanish Segunda, obviously a massive loss that we spoke about previously. They've replaced him with former Jubilo midfielder Yuki Kobayashi, who'd obviously been away to Europe. He'd played at Heerenveen, did quite well there, but more recently he's had two spells in Korea, which haven't necessarily gone too well, so he's managed to get back to Japan. He should fill that void from Hashimoto. I'm sure. I think Ogihara is looking to be out of the door there as well, so I'm sure he'll fit in there. He was very good for Jubilo, and the irony is that he's coming back to potentially help relegate them. But yeah, it looks like a pretty decent signing on paper for Kobe. Otherwise, Gamba have made a decent enough signing from Tokyo Verde in Rihito Yamamoto, another young midfielder that they just keep putting them through, don't they, at Tokyo Verde. I'm not necessarily sure that a 20-year-old is necessarily the guy you want to plug in to save your season at Gamba, and as talented as he may be. But yeah, so that's a really interesting one to see how he fits in into the squad. And then yeah, otherwise not too many more high profile signings. Sagan Tosu have signed a couple of players, Yuichi Naganuma from Sanfrecce Hiroshima and Kohei Tezuka from Yokohama FC. Like most of their signings, they look okay on paper, but they'll probably turn them into superstars and have them challenging for the Champions League. So yeah, that's about it, I think, from this week. The other one, crossing the old Shizuoka divide, is Ko Matsubara, who used to play left back for Shimizu, went to join every other Japanese player in Europe at STVV in Belgium. He has finally come back, but signed for Jubilo Iwata. So that's an interesting... I don't know how many... I know Shota Kaneko obviously has done, but I don't think it's the most well-trodden path, is it, between Shimizu and Jubilo? So that's an interesting signing. And, yeah, again, in a relegation battle, could Matsubara help relegate Shimizu? So we've got some interesting storylines, I think, coming for the remainder of the season.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, there goes all of Matsubara's goodwill from the Shimizu faithful. That's out the door with him signing for Iwata. But those two are obviously Shizuoka teams currently at bottom of the pile as we head into. Well, I guess we're kind of beginning the stretch run, aren't we, Sam, with the 12 games to go. And obviously the ACL clubs have still got crunch matches to play, but the league takes priority at least for the next few weeks. And on Saturday it doesn't get any bigger than a battle of the top two, which we'll see it take place at Nissan Stadium on Saturday night at 7 o'clock, when Yokohama F. Marinos, the leaders, host a second placed Kashima. Of course, both of these teams have drawn their most recent games. F. Marinos, their last two, and indeed Antlers, their last three, and four of their last five, as they have slipped a little bit off the pace set by F. Marinos. But, it promises to be an absolute cracker. F. Marinos, even though they're the host, Sam, I think they have very little pressure on them in this game, don't they? I mean, the momentum is with them, and I think it's up to Antlers to really make the pace in this game, and that could ultimately play into F. Marinos' hands, I think.
Yeah, they've got the 5-point cushion on them, so they can really afford to, it's not necessarily the way that they play, but they can afford to allow Kashima onto them a little bit, ask them to do the moving in the game, and they can hit them on the break. And yeah, obviously Marinos are very clinical at that, so yeah, it should play into their hands, or at least it has the ability to. But just games between these two sides generally seem to be massive goals, like 5-3s and whatnot. And from memory, it seems like Kashima have been the team that have managed to come out on top when it goes to that complete like ding dong battle. So it's gonna be the game of the week. It's the one that I'm gonna pick. I don't want to spoil it and make it a 0-0 by bigging it up too much, but yeah, it looks like a real quality game on paper. And the only thing that would stop Marinos from being a little bit more comfortable is because Kawasaki in third still have those two games in hand, so their gap, while it sounds like it's 5 points and it looks quite comfortable, it might not be as comfortable as it seems. So yeah, there's still pressure on both sides, but I would agree with you that the onus is on Kashima to try and get a result here.
Indeed, and there are two other games that involve top half teams facing each other, and indeed one of them is involving Kawasaki Frontale, who sit third, 8 points behind the leaders, but as Sam's just said, with two games in hand, and we should say with a home clash against F. Marinos coming up the following weekend, that the shapes as a season defining, no question about that. But before Frontale host F. Marinos, they have the not so insignificant matter of a trip up to Saitama Stadium to face eighth placed Urawa, who are on a lengthy unbeaten run and indeed have won their last two league games. And Sam, as you said, if the rumours are true and Miki Yamane was forced to withdraw from the Japan team tonight due to COVID, then that will obviously place a huge question marks over his availability for Saturday night at Saitama. And that could put a spanner in the works of the Frontale machine. Reds, this would be a really good occasion for them to show one and all that the progress that they've made in recent weeks has not been a false dawn, and that coming up against a very high caliber opponent, and if they can win the day here, then I think that will prove a lot of doubters wrong.
Yeah, definitely, because as you say, Reds have been on a really good run of form results wise, but I'm not sure the performances have always matched those results. So yeah, if they can come out and play against Kawasaki and put on a performance as they did in that Super Cup at the start of the season, I think that's where they need to get back to, and back to that level. So yeah, it's a really good opportunity for them. As you say, with the Yamane likely out, there's an avenue definitely to go out down that side. The only good news for Kawasaki is that they played that friendly, didn't they, against PSG. They brought them back Nobor Hisato, and more importantly, Jesse El, who against Neymar, Mbappe and Messi just looked incredible. I mean, he was so good. And considering the lack of football he'd played, I thought he was terrific. So that's a real boost for Kawasaki. Reds also played a friendly there. You didn't have the greatest news. They played Brian Linson came on for his debut and lasted about 10 minutes before going off injured. So mixed fortunes there. Let's see who Reds can put up front. That's quite important. Juncker seems to be potentially back in training, but I mean, they've rushed him back time and time again only for him to get injured. So there are issues, I think, for Reds to deal with and to get that fully functioning team up front to be able to take advantage of any holes at the back for Kawasaki. It's a really intriguing game, and it's one where I don't see Reds as really pushing any higher than, well, maybe fifth or sixth. But if they win this game and results go their way, I mean, that fourth place is not out of the realm of possibility for Reds. So, I mean, this is a key game just to see, are they able to completely turn around their season and, yeah, really push for those sorts of places? And Kawasaki, if you can beat a good Reds team in good form, get them, and the result otherwise at Marinos and Kashima goes their way as well, puts them right back in the drive towards the driving seat of the title.
It does indeed. It does indeed. So, yeah, two really interesting looking games on prospect that we've already mentioned. And the other all top half battle takes place down at the Edion Stadium in Hiroshima, where sixth placed Sanfrecce host seventh placed FC Tokyo. And well, Tokyo don't have too many happy hunting grounds, Sam, but it just so happens that the Edion Stadium is one of them. And I realize that I've probably just jinxed FC Tokyo's chances by referencing it. But yeah, Tokyo haven't lost down in Hiroshima for the last four seasons. They won there last year and indeed have won twice and drawn the other two in the last four seasons until, whatever happens on Saturday. As I said, I've probably jinxed it and Hiroshima will run away with it. And elsewhere, Sam, we've got a Kansai Derby in prospect when Gunma Osaka host Kyoto. So, Gunma will be hoping for a little bit more luck in this one than they had, obviously, against Cerezo in the most recent incarnation of the Osaka Derby. And for Kyoto, they've been grinding away and digging out points here and there in the past few weeks, of course, to keep them above water. But, they're only 4 points outside the 4 points above Gunma, who of course occupy the promotion relegation playoff spot at the moment. So there isn't really much breathing room down there for Kyoto either, is there?
No, but this is a really good opportunity for them. If they can win this game, go 7 points clear of Gunma, that's a lovely cushion to have with what would be 11 games remaining. So again, and I think it's the case with a lot of these games towards this stage of the season, they all become quite pivotal. Obviously, if Gunma win, you get yourselves 1 point behind Kyoto, you bring them right into the pack again, and then it brings so many teams right on the edge of the relegation zone. So yeah, this is a really interesting one. It's one where Kyoto, I think, if they can win this, I think they'll see themselves having a really good chance of staying up. But conversely, if they lose, then I think they might be relegation favourites. So again, a lot hangs in the balance with this one. And let's see what Gunma can do, because obviously in really poor form, they've just been spanked by PSG, which can't be great for the morale. I'm not sure how many signatures they managed to pick up after the game, so that might be boosted their morale if they managed to get Mbappe's signed photo or something like that. But it's not really gone well for them, and another loss here. I mean, it's just they keep piling on. I'm not sure how many more they can take before all morale completely goes.
They keep trying to refresh the squad in the summer transfer window, don't they? But they're running out of time, and they really need to get some positive results and string a few together rather than just the odd one here and there. And it's actually quite a pivotal week in the relegation dogfight, isn't it? Because leading off the match day at 2 o'clock on Saturday, a Sapporo host Nagoya, and these two are wedged in between Kyoto and Gunma in the table. Nagoya are 13th and Sapporo 14th, and just above Nagoya at the moment are Shonan in 12th, and they travel to bottom-placed Iwata, who have lost their last four and indeed have failed to score in their last four league games, Sam. So, yeah, there's a couple of really huge games as well in the relegation dogfight. So not only is it potentially season-defining at the top, but, yes, at the bottom, some teams are going to be feeling very good about themselves on the Saturday evening, and others will be really starting to question themselves, you'd have to imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I obviously hope, just as a neutral, you kind of want Jubilo to win, you want Gamba to win, you want Shimizu to win to really tighten that up. But, yeah, you could see a situation where Kyoto, Shonan and Nagoya win. That pulls them really far away from that relegation zone, puts themselves a really nice cushion. So, yeah, they're really vital games across the board going into those relegation places. I think, like Gamba, I think this is a massive game for Jubilo. If you look at any... Once you're down there, you look at home game against Shonan Bellmare and you think that has to be a game that you win. And yeah, they've had the break. They've been able to really focus fully on this game, whereas Shonan haven't been able to. They've obviously been performing well, and that's led to a few of their key players not being with the squad for the last couple of weeks with the national team. So maybe Jubilo have the ability just to have been fully focused on this game, whereas there's a few distractions around Shonan, so maybe they can use that to take advantage of it. But yeah, it's going to be really difficult given how well Shonan have played recently and how poorly Jubilo have.
Yes, indeed. And well, we might as well give the other two games some props as well, Sam, because it is a fascinating match day from top to bottom. We've got Cerezo Osaka hosting Fukuoka. And if this game is flying under the radar, well, it probably shouldn't, because if results go for them and Cerezo can take care of business against Avispa, then by the end of the match day, they could be third in the table. Of course, Frontale would still have two games in hand on them. But they, yes, if Frontale and Reysol both fail to win and Cerezo take all 3 points in their game, then yes, they would indeed zip up to third in the table. While Fukuoka, I guess they're in a similar boat to Kyoto, a couple more points of breathing room. And well, yeah, the final game is arguably one of the most intriguing of them all. It's the reverse derby, I guess. I'm trying to think of a clever name off the top of my head, Sam, but the reverse expectation derby. How about that? At the start of the season,
I like it.
Most of us had Kobe at least in our top four. And yes, well, we all know what's happened to them. And they're indeed still down in the bottom four, while Kashiwa Reysol were tipped by so many to go down to J2. And they find themselves fourth in the table. So it's fourth from bottom hosting fourth from top in the role reversal derby. And well, yeah, it's as I say, Sam, it's arguably the most entertaining game in prospect of the lot of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really interesting one just to see how Kobe are going to line up here, because they've lost to Ryo Kikuchi. He's out with a knee ligament injury. So that's we don't really know anything more on Yoshinori Muto, who got injured before the international break. Mm. I think Bojan is also out. So there are lots of issues. They're obviously losing Hashimoto as well. We spoke about how important he'd been. So they're going to have to, he's going to have to really revamp the team a little bit. Osaka is probably going to be fit, but are they going to be able to play him and Mugosa in the same team? It's just really intriguing to see how Kobe line up. Yes, they're still good players there, but they've always been a delicate balance to get right at Kobe. And if it's not perfect, they do kind of fall apart. So it's a difficult one for if Mr. Yoshida is the one making the picks in this team, or if Mikitani is picking the team. But whoever it is, it's an interesting conundrum for them to deal with. Whereas Reysol, you could pretty much name their team every week. They've been playing so much above expectations. Maybe Mao Hosoya has got a bit of a boost from his international duty. So yeah, that's a really interesting game. And another one that really I can't call, and I mean, good luck to anyone is doing prediction leagues or anything like that, because this looks a horrible week to try and pick any result.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's fascinating. And, of course, as we said earlier, the only game on Sunday is the Shimizu versus Tosu. So, yeah, terrific-looking weekend of J1 action. And, well, yeah, it's obviously good to leave this international break on a positive note, talking about Japan, Sam, and them able to lift a trophy. But, yeah, that's in the past now. I think we're done giving our credit to Mr. Moriyasu. And, yeah, all we can do now is just look forward to the return of J1 and a bump around that I can't wait to wrap up with you on next week's episode.
Yeah, I can't wait either. This is also a really exciting round on paper, and it's always good just to get back into the swing of J1. So I look forward to the return of long, lengthy episodes next week.
Yes, I'm sure the listeners are crying out for them as well. So, yeah, we'll be more than happy to give them what they're after next week. So that's it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 23. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yes, 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 yes.
The EAFFFF Cup.
The EAFFFF Cup.